This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Addiction Prevention and Health News channels. We're also streaming on demand 24/7 on TuneIn Radio and the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Stephen Jonas, MD, MPH, who is a professor emeritus of preventive medicine and public health, Department of Preventive Medicine at Stony Brook Medicine in Stony Brook, New York. He has been active in the U.S. drug policy reform movement from the public health perspective for over 25 years. Certainly stands to be an interesting conversation. And Dr. Jonas, we welcome you back to eHealth Radio.
Thank you, Eric. And it's very good to be here. Very good to be on the air with you again.
It certainly is always great to have you each and every time. So to kick things off today, tell us, what is the drug war and what are its consequences to kick things off?
Well, the drug war is a program which is run by the federal government in this country. It's and the state governments as well, by many governments around the world, which is supposed to be aimed at reducing the use of primarily three specific what I call the recreational mood altering drugs. That's marijuana, heroin, and cocaine. Uses primarily methods of the criminal justice system to do that. In this country, it has resulted in the imprisonment of hundreds of thousands of people convicted of nonviolent drug offenses. One thing that it does is that it makes the it makes possession and use of the labeled substance a crime. Not just the commerce in it, but also possession and use, which interestingly enough distinguishes it from prohibition with a capital P against alcohol in this country between 1920 and 1933, which did not criminalize possession or use. So that's what the drug war is. It has been going on since the early 1970s, and in terms of the use of these substances, it has had little impact. It has had a major impact in the criminal justice system, in neighborhoods, on many young people, particularly people of color.
Now, you talk about the RMADs. Get into what is exactly RMADs.
Okay, it's a term. This was over 25 years ago, I started looking at drug policy. I started looking at the drug war, at the so-called illicit drugs, mainly marijuana, heroin, and cocaine. And I realized that if you took a step back and you looked at the drug use situation from the public health perspective, the first step back indicates that the major drugs of use for recreational purposes are, of course, nicotine in tobacco products and ethyl alcohol and alcoholic beverages. So when I started looking at the whole picture of drugs that are used for other than medicinal purposes, I came up, I thought about it. Well, they're recreational mood-altering drugs. That's what they do. They alter your mood. People use them for recreational, not for medicinal or pharmaceutical purposes. So I coined the term recreational mood-altering drugs. Then I wrote it down, and it came out as RMADs. And you can interpret that any way you want to. It happens that the most widely used RMAD in the world is a drug called caffeine. And, it's a stimulant, as everybody knows. And that it's used for maybe not recreational purposes, but certainly not medicinal purposes. It's used with helps us all stay awake. And but that's the one. It's a recreational mood altering drug. So that's and that's what led me to start looking at a wider field and looking at different the objectives that we really should be looking at when we are dealing with the recreational mood altering drugs, which are not punishing people for using them, but rather helping people who use them, or setting up circumstances so that they can, certain of them, can, like alcohol, for example, can be used in a responsible way.
Now, let's get into what is the drug culture, maybe even of recent years, and what it is today.
Well, what I did, once I started looking at the recreational mood-altering drug, I started looking at the recreational mood-altering drugs as a unity. In terms of harms, and I'll get to your question in a minute, Eric, in terms of harms, obviously, by far and away, the most harmful recreational mood-altering drug is nicotine and tobacco products. Tobacco use is still killing almost 500,000 persons a year in the United States. That number will go down over the years because the proportion of adults smoking is going down, and we'll get back to that very important observation a little while later. Then the next most harmful drug is ethyl alcohol and alcoholic beverages. It kills about 85,000 persons a year. It happens, for example, that in murders, in half of all murders, either the murderer or the victim or both are using alcohol. So alcohol has some particularly harmful alcohol use has some particularly harmful side effects. The marijuana, maybe 3 to 4 million users, very, very, very rarely a death related to marijuana. Then we come to cocaine and heroin. Coke is mainly used recreationally. Most coke users, the majority of coke users, are not addicted. You know, they generally tend to stay indoors when they're using this stuff. Heroin, of course, is becoming an increasingly difficult problem because its use has been stimulated by the development of the modern prescription painkillers, which are, in one way or another, morphine-based. The use of the prescription drug painkillers it can be, for many people, becomes addictive, and then it can lead to heroin use. Now, so that's sort of the picture. You know, and then of course we have to worry about meth as well, increasing use of trimethylbenzamide. The thing is that when I again started looking at this whole situation from a public health perspective, what one sees in this country is that indeed we have a drug culture. We have a culture that encourages people to think, if there's something wrong, if I take a pill, if I take a shot, if I use this ointment, I'm going to get better. And this starts in little children. The chewable vitamins that are sold to parents for use by small children, chew this gumball, which happens to contain vitamins in it, and you're going to be better. You're going to be healthier. You're going to be a better person. The drug culture starts around, you know, age 4 or 5. If you look at the way pharmaceuticals are sold, there's an obvious drug culture. I mean, both for the prescription and the non-prescription medications. You know, you look at the ads on television for the antacids. If you're going to have heartburn, take this pill. Nobody ever says, maybe you should think about what it is you're eating that gives you heartburn and try something else you like, you know, if there is something else that you like. And then, of course, this country, there's only one other country in the world that permits the advertising of prescription drugs on television. The other country that does it is New Zealand. It's absolutely ridiculous in my view. I think it's done primarily, you listen to them and they're primarily giving you all the legalese about all the side effects of the particular drug. I think they're there primarily so that pharmaceutical companies can use them in case of getting sued in the future. What, you didn't know this? The point is that the message is very clear. If there's something wrong, take this drug. Ask. These are prescription drugs. These are drugs which a person can get only from a physician who has had lengthy medical education and is licensed and can therefore legally write prescriptions. And what does the ad say? Ask your doctor. Essentially, ask your doctor to prescribe this particular drug. So that this is a big package which creates this what I call the drug culture. It goes way beyond the arm ads and certainly way, way beyond the ones that are currently criminalized.
Thanks for that thorough explanation as well. Today we are joined by Dr. Stephen Jonas, MD, MPH, a professor emeritus of preventive medicine and public health, Department of Preventive Medicine at Stony Brook Medicine in Stony Brook, New York. He's also the author of Ending the Drug War, Solving the Drug Problem, the Public Health Approach, here on eHealth Radio's Addiction Prevention and Health News Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Jonas, how do you relate to the current drug policy reform movement?
Not terribly well. I have a lot of friends in the drug policy reform movement. I've known these folks for about 25 years. There are a couple of differences. One is that whereas I see recreational mood altering drug use as a unity, they don't. They accept this artificial distinction that the drug war laws make, that it's one kind of drugs that is mainly alcohol and tobacco over here, and the other kinds of drugs, mainly marijuana, heroin, and cocaine over here. That there is some kind of distinction. If you look at the effects of these substances on people, on their mental processes and their physical health, they all do the same thing. Some do more, will do more stuff mental and less stuff physical. Nicotine is a mild depressant, but we know what tobacco smoke produces in terms of disease. So there's a main difference between me and the bulk of the drug policy reformers in that I see the recreational mood altering drugs, and that's why I invented that name as a unity. They accept the artificial distinction which is created by the federal drug laws that alcohol and tobacco are over here and the currently illicits are over there. The second point about the interrelationship between alcohol and tobacco and the illicits is that it is there are many studies done on this now. It is clear that it is use of alcohol and tobacco products by children, sometimes starting as young as 8 years old, but certainly by 13 or 14, that leads in later life to the use of marijuana and then heroin and cocaine. The tobacco and alcohol are the stepping stone drugs. Marijuana is a stepping stone drug to the use of heroin and cocaine. A major difference between me and the drug policy reformers is this dichotomization that they accept from the national government. Now that leads then to major differences in what should be done. For a number of years now, the DPM, the drug policy reform movement, has been focused on legalizing marijuana. I'm all for legalizing marijuana, My program, in fact, would legalize virtually all the drugs. There are a couple of highly dangerous, really almost poisonous drugs, which are used by a very small number of people, and the control of them would have to be worked out under my system. But by and large, certainly marijuana, heroin, and cocaine I would have sold in what used to be called package stores in the old days where alcohol was sold, that people could buy limited quantities and that they would know what's in the drugs. One of the reasons why we have so many heroin overdoses is that people don't know the actual amount of heroin in the substance that they're buying. They think it's less than it is. Their body is suddenly hit with a major overdose of heroin, which can lead to death. So the focus of the DPM is on marijuana legalization. My focus is on developing programs that can lead to the control and reduction of all recreational drug use. Now, the model, I use as the model for this the only truly successful drug use reduction program that we've had in history in this country, and it operates in many other countries around the world. I'm sitting in my study at home, being retired. As we are having this conversation, I'm looking at a box of cigarettes that I bought in the Bahamas, and half of the front of that box is a sign of white, black letters on a white background. It says very simply, it's a very simple message, smoking kills. We have had, even without having a stark message as that, on cigarette packages, there are pro-health messages on cigarette packages, and they have been there for a number of years now. Since 1964, since the institution of what's called the Surgeon General's program on smoking and health, following the publication in 1964 of the first Surgeon General's report on smoking and health, we've had a smoking cessation program in this country, which has been remarkably successful. We have reduced the proportion of adults smoking cigarettes from 45% to 18%. And guess what? We did that. We never locked up even one cigarette smoker for smoking cigarettes. And we've had that kind of success. We could have, and nicotine is one of the most highly addictive drugs. It's about five times more addictive than cocaine. Than cocaine. So I am looking at the drug problem from the public health perspective, and that's what the third of the triad of the three part title of the book says: the public health approach. And DPM is really looking at marijuana legalization. I'm all in favor of marijuana legalization, but that doesn't solve the drug problem. There are lots and lots and lots of sick people in this country for the use and overuse of drugs, of recreational mood altering drugs. And we don't deal with that by banning them, but we deal with that, as the approach to cigarette smoking has shown, through public health measures.
Lastly, there may be somewhat of an overlap, but as you see it and understand, what is actually the public health approach to today's drug problem?
Well, the public health approach has about 20 different components, and I have to say that if somebody is interested enough, I ask them please to go to Amazon and order the book. You can find it under my name. The first part of the title is Ending the Drug War, and it's Solving the Drug Problem and the Public Health Approach. It ranges the most important components. So the most important components are price regulation and control. What has been shown very clearly is that as you raise taxation on cigarettes, use goes down. So we have price regulation and control. We have location of use control, again in smoking. That's been very successful in banning cigarette smoking in many indoor public places. Advertising is a very important element. The limitation of age for purchase is a very important element. So there are a whole series of components that we've already tested out in the smoking cessation program that could be applied to any of the drugs. Alcohol is complicated. And if we were ever to adopt the public health approach to the use of all the addictive drugs or potentially addictive drugs, more thought would have to be given to dealing with alcohol because, of course, the vast majority of people who use alcohol use small amounts of it and don't get into trouble. They don't become alcoholics. They don't become problem drinkers. They don't drink and drive. So that is a program that needs more attention. Certainly the Centers for Disease Control has made significant advances in dealing with alcohol. Unfortunately, it's a very powerful industry politically. The alcohol industry, for example, spends about $2 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars a year advertising its product, mainly in beer, but also in hard liquor. And if I were trying to sell a product that tastes as bad as beer, I guess I would spend a lot of money advertising it as well.
I like that. Now, where can our listeners get more information? I know you mentioned your book, Ending the Drug War, Solving the Drug Problem, The Public Health Approach. Again, I'm assuming we can get that on Amazon and through the publisher.
On Amazon, yes. You can go directly to Amazon. It's right there. Presently, it's available as an ebook. There's the Kindle edition. There are other e-formats available. I do not have the details yet, and I'm not in a position where I can talk about them. I think that by next spring, the book will be available in print. But I'm not able to discuss that in any detail at this point.
Well, we'll certainly take what we can get. Dr. Jonas, it has been a pleasure to have had you. Really interesting information, very informative on the drug issues today. And we look forward to another opportunity of having you back with us right here on eHealth Radio. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you very much, Eric. Always good to talk with you. And please do stay in touch.
And you bet we will. We've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Jonas, MD, MPH, a professor emeritus of preventive medicine and public health, Department of Preventive Medicine at Stony Brook Medicine in Stony Brook, New York. He's the author of Ending the Drug War, Solving the Drug Problem, The Public Health Approach. This book can be purchased at Amazon.com or from the publisher at PuntoPress.com in digital format. And take note, we will have links provided in our show notes included with this interview for your convenience and for easy access. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Addiction Prevention and Health News channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.